This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane podcast, where queer friends and allies gather to review and discuss the original X-Men comics in continuity order. We are going to be releasing this in mid-December. We're closing the show out in 2025 with one last script reading in each of our epic groups. And today is my all Brit crew episode. Well, Brit crew, me, and a girl named London. So we all technically qualify. We're going to be reading the scripts from Captain America 9 through 12. That's right, we're doing four issues kind of all blocked together because these are really short stories. And it just made sense to do it. So 9 through 12, Captain Britain issue 9 begins in December, or was released in December 1976. This is by Chris Claremont, Herb Trimpe, with Fred Keita on inks, George Roussos on colors, Irving Watanabe on letters. Larry Lieber is the editor on both books that we're going to be, well, all four books that we're going to be reading. The first story is called Demon Fire, and the second is called Dagger of the Mind, and we will be pausing there in a moment. I'm Chad Anderson, I'll be reading your narrator today.
I'm James Lee Campbell, and I'll be reading Captain Britain again.
I'm Giza Gobble. I'll be Dr. Sin and Doctor.
Doctor without the Sin.
My name is Robin Moffat. I will be receiving a BAFTA tonight for my performances as the Demon and the Woman.
I'm Christian Smith. I'm going to be playing Mick Mastermind and Jamie Braddock.
Plus the man. This is not the Mastermind from X-Men fame. This is Mastermind the Sentient Computer. We'll be getting there. This is a huge character in Captain Britain that's being introduced. And our last cast member.
Y'all, my name is London Villamere. I am playing Betsy Braddock and a civilian.
Marvel Comics Group presents the newest and greatest superhero of all, Captain Britain, only 10 pence and in full color. Shock follows shock when Captain Britain battles the demon creatures of Dr. Sin. The cover, Captain Britain is having the worst threesome of his life. One green demon is choking him while the other wraps itself around his thigh, and both are shoving him toward the hellfire below against a backdrop of craggy rocks stretching into a golden sky. And hey, James Lee Campbell has had worse Saturday nights.
Sounds like my Friday night, yeah.
And looming large is the evil face of Dr. Sin. He likes to watch. When student physicist Brian Braddock rubs his mystic amulet, and you guys, rubs is in the text. That's not me adding. They do use the word rub. He transforms into Britain's superheroic champion of justice. Stan Lee presents Captain Britain in Demon Fire. Only moments ago, what should have been a normal landing at a private West Country airfield has turned into tragedy. And now Captain Britain has smashed free of its burning wreckage, only to come face to face with the most bizarre menace of his brief career. As a plane burns behind them, our costume hero kneels in the falling snow, cradling the unconscious form of his own twin sister, Betsy Braddock. In the distance, a white-haired maniac, clad in black, his cape blowing in the wind, sits astride a black horse.
It was monsters that pulled your aircraft from the sky and ravaged the girl's mind. Monsters spawned by the demon dreams of Dr. Sin. And as I destroyed the girl's mind, so shall I now destroy yours.
The madman gestures and a ball of fire appears in his hand. The sound effect? Foof. With quick thinking, Captain Britain gets Betsy Braddock to safety before being hit with the fire. Shazam!
Whatever that refugee from A Tale of Two Cities said about imaginary monsters, this fireball is real enough. I must get Betsy out of here. Lucky that Sin is no marksman. There, she should be safe behind this tree. Wait, heat, behind me. It's the fireball, coming at me like a homing missile. It's moving too fast. I can't dodge. Ah! My body, shaken, aching, almost as though I'd been electrocuted. And here comes Dr. Sin to finish me off. My legs are too numb to run. I'll have to stand and fight. Fight as only Captain Britain can.
Okay, now in a minute we're going to see Captain Britain use his scientific acumen again. He's smart, but if a ball of fire hits you, it should not feel like you've been electrocuted. I just want to say that's not how it works. Dr. Sin, another fireball in his fist, rushes at the hero on horseback, but Captain Britain manages to grab his battle staff. The villain is dismounted, crashing into the snow with a flump.
How does it feel to be on the receiving end for a change, chum? Sensation. Returning to my legs. all pins and needles, but at last now I can take the battle to Sin himself.
I've heard of you, Captain, the superhero who caused such a furore in London, but you'll find I'm more than your match. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. We'll move on. I've heard of you, Captain, the superhero who caused such a furore in London, but you'll find I'm more than your match.
Let's table the discussion until after our bout. And now, Sin, it's time to... What? He was right in front of me. Where did he go?
With a pop! God, the sound effects in this issue are amazing in their way. Sin disappears and reappears directly behind our hero.
I'm over here, my dear Captain.
How in?
If I weren't a sporting man, you'd be dead by now.
He's right. Blast him. I can't defeat an enemy who's unreachable, untouchable.
What? Intruders!
Suddenly a car pulls up. It's a Land Rover from the manor coming to investigate the crash.
It's a... I love when you do this so much. Sorry. It always makes me laugh. It's a Land Rover from the manor. They've come to investigate the crash.
I dare not spread my power over too many victims. Not yet. Not till it's fully developed. But before I take my leave, Captain Britain, I'll show you just how inadequate your muscular prowess is against the matchless mind of Dr. Sin.
Dr. Sin's that one old gay man at the bar that just won't take no for an answer.
All too real.
Beams of pink energy fire out of the eyes of Dr. Sin, striking Captain Britain with a dazzling light that burns the hero's mind and sears into his soul.
That light from his eyes, it's dazzling me, burning into my mind, searing my very soul.
Captain Britain turns, takes a step forward towards Sin and tries to grab him, but the very earth opens up beneath his feet.
I'm falling. I took a step towards Sin to grab him and the earth opened beneath my feet.
The captain falls through the earth into the flames below, where monstrous, miserable creatures snarl in the flames while winged demons fly overhead.
It's insane. This can't be happening. It's impossible. Yet every sense I have tells me I'm falling into Hades.
Captain Britain is determined to take my role as the narrator, so I'm just going to make him eat it every line. One of the demons yells as he picks up Captain Britain, ready to toss our heroes into the torturous flames below.
Of course, Brian Braddock, for Hades is where all sinners are sent to serve the devil for eternity. And you are a sinner, are you not? A man responsible for his parents' death.
No, that was an accident. I never meant, and they forgave me.
Forgiveness means nothing here, human. This is Hades, home of eternal despair and unending damnation, as you shall now learn.
Pain crushing me without my thoughts. Fires, sulfur stench choking me, but I can't, I won't give in. Must be all my imagination, like the monsters Betsy saw, but it seems so real, so horribly real. I must deny it. It's an illusion, nothing more. It has to be, and illusions can be resisted. Yet, what if I'm not dreaming? What if this is real? No, all my instincts tell me otherwise, and instincts are all I've left to believe in. If I deny them and succumb to Sin's illusion, then this nightmare will become my reality. I remain here forever. I must fight the illusion. Fight it! Fight it! Fight it!
This sounds a lot like me trying to overcome my queerness as a kid, as like the Mormon demons told me I was gonna burn in hell if I didn't fight
Mormon
hard enough.
Mormon spooky hell dream.
Yeah, you know our references.
Oh, yeah.
And Brian Braddock awakens back in the real world, still in the snowstorm, in a brown coat and green scarf. His brother Jamie, clean-shaven with feathered brown hair, wears blue jeans and an orange coat. His left foot is in a cast, and he walks using a crutch. While Jamie aids Brian, Mick, the family servant, is helping a disoriented Betsy back into the car.
Brian, lad, you all right? Mick, get some brandy from the flask. Quickly, man.
Yes, sir.
Jamie, is it really you?
Yeah, little brother. You're safe now.
Head still pounding from Sin's nightmare, but I've changed back to Brian Braddock without willing it. Did Jamie see the transformation? Did he discover my secret? And even worse, did Dr. Sin?
Never a dull moment working for the Braddock.
Soon, a troubled youth arrives at Braddock Manor, which was built a quarter millennium ago by a victorious general home from the European Wars on land that's been part of the Braddock heritage since before the Romans came. Land steeped in history. Land, a house, a family, that today are all under siege. And soon, within Downton Abbey itself...
I'm glad you recovered so quickly from your car crash, Jamie.
You know me, brother. I'm invulnerable. But that crash? No accident. It was a declaration of war between me and Sin.
Who is Sin, Jamie? What does he want?
power, total and absolute, to control both the bodies and minds of men.
The three siblings take refuge in a palatial room with golden wallpaper. Mick serves them all hot drinks. Betsy, particularly, still seems disoriented.
The legendary Dr. Sin, Russell Thorndyke's scarecrow of Romney Marsh, was a fighter against tyranny and justice and injustice. Our Dr. Sin was deliberately perverting the name and the memory. He started his reign of terror a month ago among the local farms and villages.
Didn't anyone try to stop him?
Yeah, a number of people, including the county's chief constable, where every person who's confronted Sin has been transformed into his devoted slave.
Except Captain Britain. He was super powerful enough to overcome Sin's hypnotic spell.
The eerie visage of Dr. Sin appears through the window in a flash of light before Betsy.
The light, dazzling, flashing at me through the window.
Your will is mine, Betsy Braddock. Now and forever, to do with as I please.
And what I please is dressing you up in pretty dresses.
Feather plumes.
And a moment later, Betsy wakes up, but her brothers suddenly appear to her as horrific monsters in a hell dimension once again, mystic sigils in the air above them. Silently, Betsy reaches for an ancestral battle axe hanging on the wall above her head.
I must have dozed off. Oh no, monsters, the same ones that attacked my plane. Somehow they've captured me and taken me into their own hideous world. But what's even more horrible, I remember these creatures killing Jamie and Brian. Now they'll surely slay me unless I can strike first. Careful, girl. Not a sound. You've made it this far. Don't muck things up now.
Anyway, Brian, that's the situation. But enough of my babbling. We've been neglecting Betsy.
Die, monsters! You killed my brother, and you'll pay for it. So help me.
Betsy's waving that axe like a madwoman. Only Captain Britain would have the power to restrain her. But if I switch to him now, I reveal my secret identity. And yet, if I don't, Betsy may well kill us both.
Next, Daggers of the Mind, in which Betsy Braddock tries to be an axe murderer. Remember that story? But first, a Captain Britain fun page. Match Captain Britain with his shadow. And how many words can you find in America? Which is not a game I want to play in 2025. Now on to issue 10, the cover. Dr. Sin has added a fashionable yellow sash to his thigh-high leather boots, black tunic mini skirt, popped collar with a brooch to clasp it, white sleeves, flared red cape look. He yells,
"Slay the fallen monster!"
to Betsy Braddock, who's wearing a green blouse with matching scarf, leather belt, orange pants. She's the kind of angry only a brunette Brit could be.
Yes, master. I hear. I obey.
And on the ground, Captain Britain clutches his battle staff in the snow.
I can't fight back. Not against my own sister.
With Braddock Manor in the background, it's superhero versus madwoman, brother versus sister. See the nightmare in A House Divided. But actually, the story's called Danger of the Mind. And ago, things were just fine. Then suddenly, Betsy Braddock is trying to chop her brother Jamie in half. But she splits a table apart instead. And this axe is fucking huge, you guys. Look at the art. It's enormous. Fuck! But to her, they don't look like the Braddock brothers at all.
Jamie, look out! Betsy's gone berserk!
Monsters! You've killed my brothers! But you're a long way from killing me.
Madness, is it? But then, consider things from Betsy Braddock's point of view. One minute, she's sitting, safe and serene, in the morning room of Braddock Manor, and the next, she's surrounded by demon things out of her most horrible nightmares. And in a truly insane panel, because this woman weighs like 102 pounds. She swings an axe and cuts down a table and a full cabinet at the same time. Scram! Like, it's not a chainsaw. Small wonder that she reacts as she does. The miracle is that she's able to stand and fight at all.
Die, monsters!
Whoosh! She almost takes Brian's head off.
Down, Brian. One wrong move here in the UK will be looking for a new superhero. Betsy's playing for keeps. She's giving Jamie and me no chance to catch our breaths, to defend ourselves.
Too true, Brian, as your twin sister suddenly shifts her deadly attention from you to your brother and back again. What? She almost takes Jamie's leg off.
My burned leg. It's in my way, slowing me down. I'm a sitting duck for Betsy's axe.
At last, I got you.
I pretend to attack, to draw her away from Jamie, but she's reacting faster than I expected. Ah, my arm!
He says as he bumps it on a chair. Like, he didn't get hurt in any way, but like his arm got bumped and he's like, oh no, my arm! Anyway.
For God's sake, Brian, get a grip.
One horror down and out. Now for the other one.
Jamie snags his leg on another chair and starts falling. Fucking chairs everywhere.
My leg, it's snagged on the chair. I'm falling.
A lot can happen in the blink of an eye. Case in point, as Betsy raises the axe to behead Jamie and Brian gives a little rub, rub, rub on a certain amulet.
Jamie's down. He's finished unless I stop Betsy. And I can't. I haven't the strength or speed to cope with a mad woman, especially with my wounded arm. Oh my God, it was a chair. Brian, come on. But if Brian Braddock can't do a thing, Captain Britain can. It will mean revealing my secret identity, but that matters little when my brother's life is at stake.
Moments, time flashing by fast, too fast.
Betsy, what are you doing? For pity's sake, I'm your brother.
Jamie has only seconds left. I've got to be right on target with my first try. I've done it.
Now fully in costume, Captain Britain hits the axe with his red, white, and blue stave. Kang!
Something else is in the room attacking me. But what? Oh no, please, no!
The scream is terrifying, torn from the depths of Betsy Braddock's soul, and small wonder, for what we see to be Captain Britain, Betsy's tormented mind sees as the most fearsome monster of the lot. Sight, smell, hearing, taste, touch, all her senses are revolted by the slavering, gibbering thing before her. It kind of looks like Hank McCoy, except drooling. Anyway, and yet, even now, she does not panic. She attacks. Without her axe, she leaps right into Captain Britain and knocks him backward through a window. Crash!
Betsy, it's useless. My words have no effect on her. She's out of her mind. Oof!
You're bigger and stronger than I, monster, but no matter what the odds, we Braddocks don't give up without a fight.
She speaks of monsters, just as in the plane when she fantasized demons that made her crash. Dr. Sin hypnotized her then, made her see non-existent creatures. Perhaps he's doing it again, and if he is, then he must be close by, controlling Betsy through the hypnotic powers of his demon dreams. And there he is.
The two Braddocks land in the snow, and Betsy's got her axe still, but now it's like the size of a hammer, basically. It's bizarre art choices. And off in the distance, there's a man still on horseback.
Twice now, Captain Britain has attempted to foil my plans. He alone is resistant to my power, and that makes him dangerous. Too dangerous to live.
Watch it, Brian. You were so preoccupied with Dr. Sin that you let Betsy get the drop on you. Sorry, sis, but one try is all you get. Over you go, my love. Must be more alert. Right now, I'd be dead if Betsy hadn't checked her swing at the last moment.
Captain Britain dodges a swing from the axe, which is now about the size of a tennis racket, but then it shrinks to the size of a frying pan by the next panel, and then knocks Betsy over and pins her arms, while Jamie comes outside to investigate the weird hero on top of his sister in the snow.
It was as if she were trying to fight off Sin's control, but now she's struggling like a tigress again. And to make matters worse, here comes Brother James.
You, Captain Brian, what is going on here?
Calm down, Jamie. We have enough trouble without you shouting out my secret. As for Betsy, a simple nerve pinch should put her to sleep, leaving me free to confront the real villain of the piece. Stay with Sis, Jamie. Watch over her. He's gone. He was here a moment ago. The hoof prints and broken branches prove it. Well, at least the fresh snow will make it easy to follow the trail.
But unfortunately, an unexpected wind suddenly blows up and...
The shifting snow. It's obliterated the tracks up ahead. Sin is as lucky as he is dangerous. He's made his escape.
After a fruitless search, Cap returns to the manor and to his brother's unending questions.
I'll answer all your questions later, after we've gotten Betsy to the hospital.
All right, but make those answers good ones, for all our sakes.
Mortar Research Center, not far from the snow-swept hills that surround Braddock Manor, and the only clinic for 50 miles, a clinic that specializes in diseases of the mind. Inside, Betsy is suspended on a table with her head in the biggest fishbowl ever. I'm assuming she's just doing it to get a perm here, like it looks kind of like that imagery. But behind her, a wall of massive machinery is placed.
You're different, you know, Brian. Changed. Inside as well as out.
I've seen a lot these past weeks, Jamie. What I'm saying, I've talked with gods. I stood within an enchanted circle and took on the powers and responsibilities of a superhero. But yet, for all Captain Britain's power, I couldn't do a blessed thing to protect my sister from Dr. Sin.
Superheroes? Supervillains? It's all like an incredible dream.
Yes, and I'm one of the protagonists, bewildered by forces beyond human understanding. So until I can sort out this madness, I want you to remain silent about what you've learned this day.
All right, I will.
And in walks Dr. Ramsay, a tall man with the weirdest chin beard. He wears a red tie and brown coat.
Our sister, Doc, how is she?
As well as can be expected. She's resting now. We plan to keep her at Mordor for more tests. Nothing to worry about, just a routine precaution. The best thing you two can do, though, is go home and get some sleep yourselves. I know you'd prefer to stay, but if you do, you'll only be getting in the way. So hop it, both of you. I'll ring you first thing tomorrow morning. The brothers are gone, Master, and the girl is being prepared. We will begin extensive brainwashing this evening. She will have no memory of our indoctrination sessions, but within a day, she will be yours to command.
That's right, the maniacal Dr. Sin is there too.
Excellent, my dear Ramsay. Normally I dislike using such crude methods, but my own powers are not yet sufficient to control the girl adequately. The delicious irony of it all, that the unsuspecting brothers should deliver their sister right to my doorstep, that I may shape her into the weapon of their own destruction.
But that's next time in Burn, Witch, Burn. But first, this issue's Captain Britain fun page is a Lion of Avalon maze with a note that reads, "Even Richard the Lionheart would be afraid to enter this maze, but not you, O true believer. And remember, the shortest distance between two points is not a straight line." Ugh. There's also a word puzzle. Both these books came out in December 1976. We're going to continue with Captain Britain 11 and 12. Same creative team. Captain Britain 11, the newest and greatest superhero of all, is only 10 pence. Our hero, dressed in his red suit with the Lion of Avalon on his chest, is rushing forward with his battle staff. Behind him, a row of homes, and in front, a woman has been chained to the stake. Men with torches surround her. One man fires a shot and a bullet narrowly misses her head. The woman has her arms behind her. She's wearing a collared yellow shirt, green pants, huge brown leather belt, and black boots.
Go back. We'll kill you too.
No, I can't let you burn.
Captain Britain, stop him! In the name of Dr. Sin!
Superhero battles mob gone mad. Stan Lee presents Captain Britain. Having barely escaped a murderous attack upon himself and his brother by their hypnotized sister, Brian Braddock has fled Braddock Manor to seek solace and silence in the countryside. But now even this respite is shattered by the bone-chilling cry of "Burn, Witch, Burn!" And those menacing cries grow ever louder in the ears of the pursued. A young couple from a nearby village who are fleeing for their very lives when the woman slips in the snow.
Oh, I'm slip.
In an instant, the angry mob is upon them.
Now we have the witches, we'll burn them on the spot.
Hold on there. Let's keep this thing civilized, shall we?
Who the flaming heck are you?
Captain Britain. Now calm down and let's get to the bottom of this.
Bat out, mate, or we'll have you too.
You're still missing. Oh, sorry.
That is me, right? Cool. Chad, if you want to jump in. You're still missing the point. I'm not a chap on his way to a costume ball. I'm a flesh and blood superhero. Son, unless your hearing is impaired, you'd best listen when I speak. My tough talk stopped them for a moment to figure out how to avoid a confrontation.
Then, as time seems to stand still, we open on Captain Britain facing off against a group of armed men in the snow. But let's go back a bit. The mind behind the mask of Captain Britain whisks back a few hours. Brian, in a yellow coat, stands with his brother Jamie in their home.
My brother, the costume hero all Britain is talking about? I can't believe it.
I share your incredulity, but nonetheless, it's true. Preternatural forces and a capricious fate have somehow conspired to affect the impossible. So until I've had time to think, to sort things out, let's speak no more of this.
And so Brian fled Braddock Manor, seeking refuge in the surrounding forest and seeking answers to all the perplexing problems besting Britain's first superhero. But still the answers would not come until finally, after hours of aimless wandering, Brian Braddock rubs his amulet and changes form. He runs, grips a tree branch, then another, vaulting himself up on a rock face in the snow while talking to himself.
Face it, old boy. If you can't help yourself, perhaps Captain Britain can. And now that I've touched the amulet and changed into my alter ego, I'll give it a go. I'm off. Leaping 10 times higher than any normal man possibly could. The exhilaration is almost indescribable. It's as if Brian Braddock no longer exists. The very sky seems mind-commanding, graceful, acrobatic movements. Eat your heart out, Brian. Perhaps that's the answer I've been searching for. The way to end the identity crisis that I've been suffering. Just a moment ago, I was talking as if I were someone other than myself. A totally different person. But of course I am. At least physically, which must produce profound changes in my personality. Wait, slow down. I can't simply kill off old Brian, or can I?
The identity crisis that he's finally suffering. Like, oh, a magic lady gave me a new body. Maybe I should figure out what the hell that means. But before any conclusion can emerge from the reigning confusion...
Uh-oh. Looks as if the self-analysis session will have to wait. There's an angry armed mob just over the rise, in pursuit of two unarmed people. Not at all the odds Brian Braddock would choose to face, but for Captain Britain, it's the right cup of tea.
Suddenly, Captain Britain's reverie is shattered by the crushing force of reality. A mob is attacked, and one hits the hero with the butt of a gun. Thud.
Superhero, eh? I'll show you, superhero. Quick, swamp him while he's...
But the young Lion of London is not about to be overwhelmed. Instead, he launches a counterattack, first lashing out with his staff, then using it to vault out of harm's way, and finally swooping back into the very midst of the attackers.
You can't always believe what a chap says, but in my case, you should have memorized each word.
But the costumed warrior would be less confident if he could see an all-too-familiar cloaked figure lurking sinisterly behind the scene. A mysterious white-haired man on a black horse is off in the distance. Remember Dr. Sin?
So once more, Captain Britain dares to interfere with my master plan. Well, let him, for this battle most surely will be his last. So swear I, Dr. Sin!
But back to our hero, who's knocking a gun aside.
Odd. I thought I had things under control, but suddenly I seem to be tiring, while my foes grow stronger.
The villagers are fighting more fiercely than ever. There's no chance of them losing now, not with the mental essence of Dr. Sin flowing through directly into their minds.
The mental essence flowing through... Jeez, kinky. The villain wears a collar higher than his own hair and has a swirling hypnotic brooch holding it closed.
I don't know where your second win has come from, but it still isn't enough to defeat me.
Maybe you can't give it a proper licking, mate, but we'll still finish off the witches. They're dead in my sights. And not even you can keep me but from blasting them.
Brian throws his staff, hitting the man in the gut.
Fuck!
Don't worry, folks. I'll have you safely away from this in no time.
And remember that innocent guy and his wife from earlier? He's still cowering over there with his wife.
Watch out! Behind you! There's another bloke with a gun!
But the warning comes too late, and a load of double-aught shot explodes directly toward Captain Britain's back. At such close range, the deadly charge slams into its valiant victim with the force of a lightning blast, rendering him unconscious and propelling him toward the edge of a cliff, where his limp form rolls over the edge and plummets helplessly downward towards certain death. Hitting the ground with a sickening thud, Captain Britain lies motionless, no longer a threat to the throng watching from above. But even as the mob angrily turns back to their initial prey, a spark of life still remains within the mind of the fallen hero, remains to grow and multiply into a new life force, an unexplainable power which slowly draws the brain back from the endless void of darkness. Finally, some hours later, the grim veil of death has disappeared, leaving only a shimmering fog of semi-consciousness. And though he knows not why, Captain Britain lives, and the civilian man has rushed down, pulling our hero into the snowy cave below.
I can't believe it. No one could have survived that fall.
Unless we were somehow protected by a supernatural power. The girl who was with you, what happened to her?
A mob caught her, managed to escape, but they've taken her to the village, too.
I know their plans. Just pray that we arrive in time.
The village is just north of here.
Right, let's get cracking.
I can't understand this whole ghastly affair. We were never harmed anyone. Why would they accuse us of witchcraft?
Perhaps it's not so baffling as it seems. At least, not if my suspicions prove true. Suspicions that this nightmare was spawned by the diabolical mind of Dr. Sin.
Have you guys ever seen Young Frankenstein? And whenever they announce that Frau character's name, there's like a horse sound off in the background. Like, I feel like we need something every time we say Dr. Sin. There needs to be like a somewhere off.
When I was reading the script, I picked up that they say the full name the whole time. So I've just went, Dr. Sin.
I'm now trying to replicate your Dr. Sin in a really, you know, really
it's so glad you're clarion, bum bum bum, the witch boy.
Yes. Some 15 minutes later,
there they are, gathered in the square, a mindless mob, decent people helplessly acting under a sinister control.
We must stop them. We must.
Don't worry, I intend to.
The female is a witch. None of us will be safe until she's destroyed. Light the torch.
Next issue, Captain Britain and Dr. Sin face to face. You dare not miss it. But first, a Captain Britain fun page. Find as many invisible women in a jumble as you can and rhyme some words with Reed. Those don't have anything to do with Captain Britain. And now, Captain Britain 12 in full color. Dr. Sin is all muscular and glowing with energy, standing even larger than Captain Britain, whose battle staff is glancing off the villain's force field.
Though, nothing can harm Dr. Sin.
He's right. I can't pierce his force field. He's one.
Listeners, please start over. And every time you hear the name Dr. Sin, please take a shot. Just throw that in.
I'm already half cut.
Sin.
Mistaking an innocent girl for a witch, a crazed mob prepares to burn her at the stake. As Captain Britain races to her rescue, he's aware that his foes are acting under the hypnotic influence of the demonic Dr. Sin. Vaulting toward the blazing pyre, the young warrior's only thought is that to save the girl is to die a superhero.
I caught Sin and the whole daft village off guard, but I must act fast before they come down on me.
Help me, please.
It's that mug in the costume again. But how? We finished him back in the forest.
I've reached her, but unless my staff is strong enough to break her chains, we'll both be dead in seconds. I haven't had this staff long enough to measure its strength, let alone test it for other capabilities. I only pray the powers that fashioned this stick didn't stint. Something's giving. I can feel it.
Brian breaks the chain with his huge stick. Back, and the base has been lit on fire. The crowd means to burn this woman alive.
It's the chain.
Oh.
The girl is falling. Must grab her before she hits the flames.
Look, you saved the witch.
And indeed, with one incredible leap, both superhero and girl stand 50 yards away, safe from searing heat, if not from the mob's frenzy.
Here they come, enraged beyond all reason. And with no staff, I'll not be able to hold them off. But there wasn't a choice. I didn't have time to save both the girl and my weapon. It had to be the girl.
Then, as the vengeful villagers close in for the kill, a roaring fire totally engulfs what might have been Captain Britain's only hope for salvation. But suddenly the attackers freeze, like players in a stop-action sequence on television. And a startled hero whirls to confront an all-too-familiar voice. Dr. Sin has ridden in on horseback.
It is not fitting for rustics to destroy you, Captain Britain. That pleasure belongs to Dr. Sin.
Good lord, this gag.
I like beating dead horses.
We love it. So my suspicions were correct. You are the puppeteer who's been pulling the strings of this nightmare. But how? Why?
How? By the utilization of greater mental power than man has ever known. As for the why, to test that mental power first on these simple country folk, next on the more sophisticated city dwellers. And finally, on all mankind!
Because that's the order things go in. However, while Dr. Sin dreams of world domination, let us ever so briefly turn our attention to a highly secret computer complex tucked away in a secluded mansion nearby, where a vast gang of man-made machinery surveys and records the doctor's every action, and unbeknownst to him, painstakingly plots each movement he will make, each word he will speak, in advance. However, at this crucial moment, the monstrosity of transistors and electrical circuits senses something is very, very wrong. We're about to introduce you to the computer mastermind, and this character is bigger in X-Men mythology than you think. We'll get there over time.
Problem. Though more powerful than anticipated, master section to section 5. Request solution immediately. 5A. Reporting. Control over subject remains total, but master section lacks sufficient energy to transmit to subject for defeat of foe. Computer data received and accepted. Master section now diverting all energy to subject. Energy flow to all other subjects temporarily lost. View screen confirms successful transmission. Subject attacking foe. Estimate victory momentarily.
In the view screen, Dr. Sin knocks Captain Britain back with a psychic blast from his own eyes. But before we switch from technology back to tumult, let us look in on our other two Braddocks, Jamie and Betsy. Betsy's under the care of a doctor wearing a pink ruffled blouse, her blonde bob resting on a pillowcase.
I'm sorry, lad. We've done all we can. It's hopeless.
You must be daft. Look at her. She's sitting up. Betsy!
Jamie, I'm a bit dizzy.
Something went wrong. Sin was certain that the girl wouldn't regain consciousness.
You seem completely recovered. It's a miracle.
Or a disaster. I must contact Sin immediately.
But Dr. Sin has more pressing concerns at this particular moment as...
He's unleashing his attack. Bolts of his mental energy are tearing through my brain. Even my staff couldn't help me now.
Your meddling is at an end. You're finished.
Energy gathers in the Doctor's hands and strikes the hero full force. Zat!
Ah!
But to the villain's surprise, Captain Britain proves stronger and more resilient than he anticipated.
He almost did me in, but I can't let on. Can't let him realize he has the upper hand. If that was your best, I suggest you make no long-range plans.
Then the young Lion of London charges his foe with all the strength he can muster, and he crashes into a force field womp.
No plans? Nonsense. My mental force shield will assure me a long and secure future.
Long and secure, much like my penis. Like, this character's just giving Liberace to me so much. Like, it's Liberace. I don't know. Anyway, we're going to just keep going. Sorry. Then, as the fallen hero lies stunned and struggling to regain consciousness, Sin levitates Captain Britain's body in the air before him.
And now, through my mental power alone, I shall levitate your helpless form and send you to your final fate.
Main section report. Subject is in complete control. Power flow to subject. Constant. All sections will remain deactivated until mission is completed. Anticipate completion in 50 seconds. Standby for victory notification. Commanding subject to levitate victim towards flame. Subject obeying. Completion now less than 30 seconds away. Victim will be dropped into flames. Anticipate his immediate destruction. Completion now less than 20 seconds away. Standby.
It is rumored that in the last moments before a man dies, his entire life flashes before his eyes. But in Brian Braddock's case, his thoughts contain only one scene from the past, that of the mysterious gods who granted him the very powers which had led him to this moment. Brian thinks of Merlin and Roma.
Who are you? Why did you choose me? Was my destruction your purpose? And if not, why don't you save me? Why?
The grim game is over, Captain Britain. You're finished, and your insignificant demise will launch my epic conquest of all mankind. Thus, I withdraw the mental shield which holds you suspended and commend you to the flames.
Main section report. Completion. Victim released. Plummeting. We'll continue to monitor heartbeat until cessation. Stand by.
The flames rushing towards me that are searing my skin. Heaven help me. Is this how it ends?
Next, from the ashes. And on the fun page this time, how are these Nick Furies different? Meh. There's also a bunch of double page letter pages through these issues. Well worth checking out if you have access.
This isn't just a game, it's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100 year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
This is a crazy setup. We're going to continue this story next time, where we learn, and this is early spoilers for our cast, Mastermind is behind the power of Dr. Sin because he's trying to analyze Captain Britain's powers. And Mastermind is also inherently connected to the Braddock family line. We'll get into it in the future. Giza, you got to play another epic villain. This one, just ridiculous. We shared a few comments as we recorded, but let me hear some of your early thoughts on what it was like to play Dr. Sin. His real name, by the way, is Christopher Thorne.
Oh, no. It's Dr. Sin. For some reason, for him to always be on a horse to begin with, every time we've seen him in these, like, the first three parts of this, and he's always on a horse, he just loves his drama. He just refers to himself a lot, and I love that about a villain, because it's so self-centered. So I thought, when I was reading through the script, I went, that's a theme tune. So I just went, Dr. Sin! And that was me. I was away. And now, then it just became more dramatic as I went on.
The most important question of the entire day, now that we've had some time to spend with the early Captain Britain villains, fuck, marry, kill, Joshua Sprague the Reaver, Albert Potter Hurricane, or Christopher Thorne, Dr. Sin?
I'm gonna kill Reaver to flamboyant. Too flamboyant.
Also, he looked like a caveman outside of that costume, if you remember.
Yeah. And then, I'm going to kiss Hurricane because that's a good blow. Yeah, I'm probably going to marry... I'm going to marry this one because keeps me on my toes.
Also,
he's a doctor. He's got money.
Yeah, and
he's got money.
And he'll die the soonest. He dies next issue.
Oh, well, okay. Well,
he's
then
a doctor, he has horses, he obviously has a house.
Exactly. Well, I officially have launched a whole audiobook franchise that I'm doing on Patreon, and I'm looking for all sorts of suggestions, so feel free to get my Patreon, which is Giza Gobble, and have a wee listen if you enjoy my performances. There is a lot more because I'm doing about 800 characters in one book, every single book. And I think one of the ones coming up will be a Golden Girls murder mystery book. So that's going to be interesting to try and be Bea Arthur, Estelle Getty, Betty White, Rue McClanahan, all in the one.
I've read the book. It's going to be fun.
You're so talented, my friend. Giza's also here in full makeup, everyone, on her way to drag performance. So thank you so much for showing up today.
No, thank you. And I'm very, very much looking forward to the next episode, because that cliffhanger, I literally was like, why is there no more script? I was upset.
We did four today, though. Now, there is a reference when they're talking about Dr. Sin to the Scarecrow of Romney Marsh, which is ancient history. It's a three-part television miniseries that Disney put out on Wonderful World of Color in 1964. It's based on the Dr. Sin novels by Russell Thorndike, who, particularly in the 1960 book, Christopher Sin, which is the name of the book. The story is set in 18th century London around 1775 during the reign of King George III, and it centers on Dr. Christopher Sin, a respected vicar of the Dymchurch parish who leads a double life as the mysterious and feared Scarecrow by night. As the Scarecrow, Sin leads a smuggling operation to oppose the oppressive taxation and brutal press gangs of the British monarchy, distributing the profits to the impoverished people of Romney Marsh. His identity is only known to two trusted allies, Mr. Mipps and John Banks. The Scarecrow's terrifying burlap mask and haunting laugh, created using a dishcloth and champagne straws, were designed by veteran makeup artist Harry Frampton to instill fear in corrupt officials while making him a folk hero to everyone else. So this is a literal series. You can go find it in the Disney treasure trove somewhere if you want, but that's where they got the idea for Dr. Sin from. He's going to die next time. We've never seen him again in another comic book, except in an occasional flashback to early Captain Britain. So Giza, thank you whenever you need to run. Now, we also have Brian kind of going through it a little bit here. Brian's starting to see a villain who has taken over kind of his small town, infected the minds of his siblings, infected the minds of his community. They're burning people at the stake, but he's also starting to ask bigger questions to himself. James, talk to me about Brian's journey in this episode.
It's very much a coming out story, very queer-coded of I'm discovering I want to let go of my old self, but I want to live as my true self or my new self. Yeah, I find him very intriguing at this point in his history, that he would be happy to even entertain thoughts of getting rid of Brian and just being Captain Britain. I think it's really, really interesting.
What does Jamie think of Brian, Christian? Especially that scene where he walks in and Brian's like straddling Betsy.
At the time, probably sort of, oh God, not this again. Now that we know everything else, I think it's...
Have they been watching Game of Thrones? Yeah. Asks Jamie.
There's definitely an element of that. But I think with everything we know about Jamie now, it's much more of a, why has he got it and not me? But at the time, I think it's very much sort of, what the hell is that idiot doing wearing this?
Jamie has a hurt leg. There's a racing cars thing there's a theme that's going to come back for this character. We won't see him for a little while. Well, we get him a little bit. We're going to learn the truth of the death of Brian's parents shortly. So there's a lot of Braddock family lore about to make its way up. Betsy starts as a charter pilot, goes a little bit crazy, drives her brother's car to go get Brian, and then tries to murder everyone with a size-changing axe. This is a Betsy Braddock axe murderer scene with some hints at her power. There's a couple images of glowing eyes and her breaking out of the control of Dr. Sin. London, talk to us about Betsy's journey here. You got to play a mad woman.
You know what? I absolutely loved it. I think that it's also kind of a dynamic when you're the only female and you have two brothers. You kind of just want to kill them. You know, so yep. That's my thought process of playing Betsy. So, you know, it was wild. Like, it's been a fun journey. So, can't wait to see more.
We also have the incredible, although very little used, character Mick from the Braddock family staff, who's like, it's always an adventure with these three. Like, Robin, tell us about playing Mick.
So, to really get into the mindset of a character as nuanced and complex as Mick, I've been watching Downton Abbey every day for the last week. I have been cleaning my house instead of making my husband do it. I'm also lying. I've done none of those things. But yeah, that's basically what I imagine is he is the Downton Abbey sort of, I hate looking after these rich motherfuckers, but he gets all the gossip. He knows more about all these siblings than any of them know about each other, yet he is Chris Claremont.
Mick is one of those just fun little kind of side characters that we wish we had more of, but I don't think we've ever seen him ever again in another comic book. Oh. Next issue, we get to meet the beloved housekeeper, Emma Collins, though, who's wonderful. You will love her, actually. She's great. Mastermind the supercomputer. What vibes do you get from this computer? And are there any parallels to British fiction that you can draw to?
Oh, I was absolutely vibing on Tom Baker and K-9 Doctor Who. Yeah, that's the route I'm going. And even when I'm saying it, I can hear the whirls and twits of his ears and nose as I'm doing it. And
there's a certain point in Captain Britain stories where Doctor Who heavily influences the heroic stories being told about him. That's not quite happening yet, but there's, when we get to the Captain Britain core and the other world craziness, it's very Doctor Who at that point.
Spot the TARDIS in the background issues, yes, absolutely.
Or the widget.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us to Alison Stewart. Why couldn't Jamie have just died? And we'd have had, as Robin said, we'd have had Alison still.
We forgot all about Jack O'Tanner and Courtney Ross and all these other
Who are these people that you're talking about?
Like Brian.
So we start to see a narrative shift into the family drama, which kind of take over the book for a while. And then we have a long form story with the Red Skull attacking London coming up that Rob got to talk in our Red Skull episode, actually. So I was the sauciest one today. I was cracking all these dirty jokes and you guys were like, come on, Chad.
Well, Chad, that's because we're British and
Captain Britain.
We are the United Kingdom, after all. We do have a sense of modesty. Thank you.
lots of tongue twisters in this. Lots of alliteration.
Oh yeah. It really tested my tongue. So thank you for that.
Yeah. You can tell the Claremont kicked in.
Yeah, the one thing I do love about the script, Chad, is that that moment when the narrator says something and then the character says something, it kills me. And as it goes forward, I promise that my delivery will just become more and more just straight-faced, very deadpan every time I deliver it forward.
It's so silly. When I'm typing these scripts, of happens accidentally a lot, because my job as the script writer or like the script interpreter is to type what's happening. Sure. And then always look at Brian's dialogue and he just fucking says what just happened
in
the narrator's like, look outside, it's raining, and then Brian's like, look outside, it's raining, and I feel like
Captain Janeway, because she does this a lot in like Star Trek. I'm doing a little bit of a diverse binge of the series at the moment, and every time someone goes, oh my god, it must be a nebula, she goes, it must be a nebula. And so she's always, I feel like Janeway right now. I feel like Captain Janeway is just lazy script writing.
I've wanted to say that for years.
Yeah, right. It's just really funny. But every time I see it, I'm like, I need to make this a comedy moment, but also still be serious as Brian.
See, the one thing I will say, the difference is Janeway is asking a question because she doubts everyone around her.
True.
Captain Britain just does not have a lot going on between
the
ears. He's just narrating.
He's head in the clouds, and I do love our little airhead, actually.
Well, next time we get a little bit more into the family lore of Brian Rebeck, right before he has to face his first great evil, the Red Skull, involving a team up with Captain America. So we've got some fun shit coming your way. This does not feel like Betsy Braddock to me. I will just say that the character later is much different than this crazy mad woman. But God, this was fun with her giant axe hacking furniture and.
As a Jamie fan, and you and I know that I'm a Jamie fan, I'm still dying for us to have a really deep dive into Jamie, because I would die to do this. But I love Jamie so much. I love seeing Jamie in these early days. I love seeing how much of the contrast between the brothers, of Brian being, I'm good, I've gone to school, blah, 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 and then Jamie, who I've always imagined as this kind of playboy who gets himself into trouble. Obviously, we know what's coming up with, like, his debt and everything like that. I don't know when that gets revealed in these early earlier episodes if they do, but obviously I just imagine him has this camp playboy, and I love it so much. And seeing him at this stage in his life, I do
themed months on my show, as I've explained. We call it the academic panel or the trial. Jamie's gonna get a whole month, but it's not gonna be for a minute. I want to wait till we get to a little bit more of his core story.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But
yeah.
The whole Braddock family is like open, and I've got spreadsheets on spreadsheets, and I just have to pick one at a time to do, because otherwise I'll get lost. Because we also just added Moira McTaggart and Black Tom Cassidy, yeah, course, and there's this long list of amazing characters we'll get to one at a time.
Yeah, I'm just loving doing these. There's so much fun, and looking forward to the next ones. I'm Chrissy1701 on most platforms. Come and find me.
I am so excited to have been invited to be part of this. You can catch me on all socials, London Hearts You. That's London, HEARTS, and the letter U.
As we were just wrapping up the conversation there, it dawned on me that based on his presentation in these comics, if Jamie Braddock were going to be played by an actor, it really should be Jack Whitehall, and it makes me want to punch him.
That would be such great casting as well. Right. It would be such great casting because the contrast between the physical actor and his Captain Britain persona would be amazing. Oh, I love that. I love that casting. Make it happen. Make it so.
And if you want to find me on social media, you can check me out on Blue Sky, Red Breasted Robin with a Y. You should definitely do so because you will get to keep up with my upcoming exploits as I announce that I am moving to Japan in March. If you want to see what it's like for a trans woman, her trans husband and their two cats to move to the other side of the world, come and follow me having mental breakdowns on a daily basis as I try to learn kanji. Thank you.
I adore you, but I'm also wondering if the cats are trans.
So actually, yes. Coco, our ginger cat, she is a rescue from abroad. Her passport says she's a boy, but she is definitely not a boy. So she's trans. And then we have our one non-trans token in the corner here.
Oh, well done.
And when you say you rescued her from abroad, does that mean another country or from like a mean old woman?
Abroad. I am really enjoying doing these. I'm loving discovering Brian and Brian even more. You can find me on Instagram at JL_C. It's very simple. You'll see my chubby smiley face. As this goes out, 2 days ago, I opened in Santa and the Lost Letters in Norfolk. Please don't bother trying to come and buy a ticket. It is so far away from anyone else. It's like near the coast. But I'm having a great time prancing around at singing and dancing as Santa right now. If you follow the Instagram, you'll see plenty of pictures of that.
Lastly, follow the show, Graymalkin_Lane on Instagram. That's where you can find me most easily. I'm posting regular content. The next episode coming out after this will be just before the end of the year, where it's our final champion script read of the year, in which Rampage attacks. It's a fun group with all of these. I'm having such a good time producing these scripts. And then we close the year out with an episode called About Uatu. So it's all about the Watcher. Over on the Patreon, the matching theme is eyeball horror. We have all eyeball characters over on the other side. January, we're launching in with X-Men number 101, the first appearance of the Phoenix Force, as well as a full month dedicated to Nightcrawler. So we have some really fun things coming your way in early 2026. Please stay safe. Please take care of yourselves. Thank you for your ongoing support. Thank you to this wonderful group of friends. And we will see you all back here in a few months for our next Captain Britain script read, released next April. So see you all soon. Bye. And now stay tuned for some thoughts on fascism as a special guest and I talk about a Red Skull story and its modern applications. The Zamosk region expulsions, also known as the Zamosk uprising, were part of the Nazi German campaign of ethnic cleansing in southeastern Poland between 1942 and 1943, rooted in Heinrich Himmler's Generalplan Ost, the plan to Germanize Central and Eastern Europe. Zamosk, located in the Lublin district, was chosen as one of the first testing grounds for this vision. The Nazis sought to expel tens of thousands of Polish inhabitants and replace them with German colonists, creating a racially pure settlement zone known as the German Living Space, or Lebensraum. The operation began in November 1942, when SS and police units descended on villages, giving residents minutes to gather belongings before being loaded onto trains or trucks bound for camps and ghettos. Over 110,000 Polish civilians from approximately 300 villages were expelled during the campaign, and the population population included thousands of children. Many adults were sent to forced labor camps or concentration camps, such as Majdanek, where children deemed racially valuable by Nazi standards were seized for Germanization and placed with German families under new identities. Others, including the elderly and those resisting removal, were executed on the spot. Entire villages, such as Skirbe, and I'm going to get these pronunciations wrong. Okay, this city is S-Z-C-Z-E-B-R-Z-E-S-Y-Z-Y-N. I don't know how to say this city. So entire villages were systematically cleared to make way for settlers imported from regions like Bessarabia, Bukovina, and Volhynia, ethnic German regions whom the Nazi regime considered returning home to the Reich. Rather than pacifying the area, the expulsions provoked forced resistance. Polish Home Army, or the Armia Krajowa, and the People's Guard, the Guardia Ludowa, launched coordinated guerrilla attacks to protect civilians and disrupt resettlement convoys. By early 1943, these partisan forces had grown into a large-scale rural insurgency known as the Zamosk Uprising, which spread across the Lublin region. Ambushes, sabotage operations, and attacks on Germany's supply lines forced the Nazis to divert considerable manpower away from the Eastern Front. Villagers often fled into the forests, joining resistance units or forming independent self-defense groups. Despite horrific reprisals, including mass shootings and the burning of entire settlements, the resistance prevented full implementation of the German colonization plan, because the option was to either be assimilated and wiped out or to fight back. By late 1943, the Zamosk resettlement project was effectively abandoned as a failure as a result. German authorities had only managed to settle a fraction of the targeted land, and many of the colonists withdrew due to continued partisan attacks and the Red Army's westward advance. The operation left the region devastated. An estimated 50,000 people were killed or died in the camps, and thousands of children vanished into that Nazi adoption system. Yet the defiance of the Zamosk population became one of the most significant examples of Polish rural resistance during the occupation. In the post-war years, the Zamosk campaign came to symbolize both the brutality of Nazi racial purity and the resilience of occupied communities that refused to be erased. All right, let's jump to 2001. It's Captain America Volume 3, number 41. Batroc the Leaper, of all people, has been hired to steal the plans for the United States nuclear defense codes. But surprise, the man behind it all is the Red Skull. Why do you look so surprised, Air Captain? Who else would you expect to find but the Red Skull, Captain America? You wanted the plans, I should have known. Indeed, you should have. Yet another display of your many inferiorities. And the Red Skull gets another escape, clinging to a rope ladder suspended from the missing helicarrier, which happens weirdly often. He's just flying away on a helicopter holding onto a ladder as he gets the last word. Then we go to the America Lost series by Dan Jurgens, Captain America 45 through 48. A man named Adam Hauser helped fire up some racists in Louisiana who feel like Mexicans are stealing all of their jobs. He gives them white hoods and sends them to attack and kill some Mexicans at a hotel, but it turns out they were just tourists. Captain America and S.H.I.E.L.D. determine that the Red Skull has hidden the helicarrier underwater in the Gulf of Mexico. And Hauser, by the way, no surprise, is working for the Red Skull. Mexico will be enraged by morning, war along the border, cities in flames, the complete and total destabilization of America. It collapses from within rather than from without. It's close enough to taste, my friend. Paradise! And Red Skull has been to a tailor. He has a gold tunic that almost looks like an exoskeleton. Peaked shoulders, gloves, silver boots. Captain America finds the helicarrier and storms it, and finds the Red Skull drinking a glass of sherry. It has taken me a long time to realize it, but I have no reason to destroy America. Not when your pathetically diverse patchwork country is capable of doing so all by itself from within. Your nation is a cauldron of hate waiting to erupt. A cesspool of violent thoughts looking for release. It's a fuse extending from one coast to the other, waiting for someone to ignite the flame. I shall be only too happy to do so. The Skull moves the helicarrier to Louisiana, where Hauser's been stoking up tension between the white people and the minority groups. Soon our message of hate will be carried to the entire nation, he says. Our goals have been similar, you know, have always been similar, you know. Working together like this, we cannot be defeated. Together, says the Red Skull, this time you work for me. After all, I'm the one who provided the means which shall deliver us to victory. Nick Fury gets captured and bitch slapped by the Red Skull and then told he's allowed to watch. Watch your country burn from this, the best seat in the house, not from our actions, but from the actions of America's own citizens. And from the ashes, a new Reich will emerge. It turns out Adam Hauser is yet another clone of Adolf Hitler, by the way. So there's a big surprise. Yet another version of the hate monger. Go see my hate monger episode with Molly and Philip over on the Patreon this month, although we don't cover this particular story in any depth. The Red Skull makes sure that Hauser knows that he's inferior regularly. He slaps Fury again, pilots the helicarrier to the race war that he has been once again planning. Bring Fury with us. He can watch his country burn from the best seat in the house. Not from our actions, but from the actions of America's own citizens. And from the ashes, a new Reich will emerge. I've long waited to recast the world into a single unified people, genetically deserving of my leadership. What better way to start than America? When we last fought, the cosmic cube brought my aspirations to the brink of realization. The cube and I were one, my deepest thoughts revealed to its power, as were my memories and experiences. My time with Hitler, all his fiery speeches of conquest and domination, the result of all of that, the cube took all of these thoughts and ideas, coalescing them into a form of living energy and emotion. Standing before you is the personification of my dream, of Hitler's dream, raw, intensely passionate emotion given physical form. He's so hard as he says all of this. So the Red Skull finally had Hitler's baby. His plan this time, to create a hate brain COVID that will like pass through humans from person to person. They try to turn Cap evil, but Cap loves America too darn much. And with all of his clothes shredded, Cap gets to choke the Red Skull for a while. It's nearly naked. And then the hate monger gets shot and yells, "Nine!" and fades away in the breeze. Let me welcome my dear friend Priya Saxena back to the show. Priya, hello. That was a lot to jump into. I know. Are you a Red Skull fan, my friend?
I would not say that I am. Just hearing you say like his quotes, I was just like, man, I hate this guy.
He's truly terrible. I don't know if you'd read these comics before, this Dan Jurgens run on Captain America. What was it like for you to jump into this 2001 story?
Yeah, I had not read this before. I haven't read a ton of like Captain America stuff, but I like Dan Jurgens' work. I like his art style in this era is like, I feel like it has some of that vibe like from like older decades, but it doesn't feel like out of place. Like I think it looks pretty good, even if the coloring is a little bit like garish because it's 2000 and that's what they were doing.
Now my Red Skull preferences, if I'm going to get a Red Skull story, I want him to hire Batroc the Leaper to get the nuclear defense codes and then escape on a helicarrier.
I think my introduction to Batroc the Leaper was the Gwenpool series where he's like nice there. He becomes Gwenpool's friend. So I always have kind of a soft spot for him, even though he's like usually a villain and doing bad things. I'm usually like pretty neutral on Captain America, but I liked him here. He's like kind of corny, but like you still have to love him.
I didn't even get to do my Batroc French accent, everyone. You're used to my Hans and Franz Red Skull accent now, but I didn't go to be Batroc the Leaper, which is you're all very welcome for that. And then we jump to the slightly more, well, not slightly, the much more intense America Lost story, where we have clones of Adolf Hitler and incited racial violence and the hate monger rage baby. And it's so gay and horny, the whole thing. Let me hear your thoughts on America Lost. It's kind of an intense story, but it's a solid story.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked reading it at the like how blatant it is about like the racism and like the racism that the hate monger is like, because I think it does a really good job of like translating like the like Nazi mindset to like issues that were more relevant to Americans, which is specifically like hatred of immigrants and being like, oh no, they're going to replace us, we have to kill them. And I was just like, this, a lot of it feels so like relevant of like what people are thinking today. I was a little bit like shocked by that, but like in a good way. I think it was very pointed and very good.
Calling American racism, fascism very directly on the page in 2001 in a book where there's a lot of swastikas and the Red Skull being like, no, I'm your boss. I'm the one that's superior. But then it turns out it was a Hitler clone the whole time. That had to have melted your brain a little bit. It had to have.
Yeah. I think it's admirable. Like if you're going to do like a Captain America story, then like, yeah, you should be thinking about and like interacting with like not just like the like World War II like racism and like those politics, but also like the US today and like the really ugly sides of it.
He ties up Fury and says, you can watch America burn from the best seat in the house, not from our actions, but from the actions of America's own citizens, which is so deeply uncomfortably parallel to kind of the world we're living in these days. Not so directly, because we don't have cartoon supervillains wearing gold exoskeletons.
It feels like we're like one like step away from that. Like it feels like we could almost be there.
Yeah, but for some people, I think it is there, right? Like, for the people that are, like, afraid of the masked people in the streets, I think it is there for some. But for some of us, we don't have to face that quite directly yet. Did you have any moments in this series that kind of stood out as inspiring or humorous?
I liked, there was a, it seemed like Captain America had, like, maybe, like, a girlfriend or a love interest named Connie.
Connie Ferrari is her name.
Oh, my. Well, I only saw her in one issue, I think, but she seems really cool. And I was like, oh, it's kind of cool. Like, I didn't know about this character. And I was like, oh, it's kind of cool that, like, Steve has, like, this relationship with someone that is, like, outside of his work. And she seems cool. Like, she was, like, working out at home. I was like, nice.
She's a fun character. She comes back in the Great Lakes Avengers series later, but she's around in Cap for a little while, which is an interesting take on some of his comments on, like, the economy and immigration. Cap always is fun when he's challenged by someone smarter than him, which Connie Ferrari definitely is. And then we have this kind of hate monger rage baby, but the queerness of, like, shirtless Cap straddling the Red Skull, like, there's so much crazy moments between these characters, and it reads so uncomfortably queer sometimes.
Yeah, it's always, like, kind of nuts when there's, like, something that is so, like, explicitly about, like, Nazism, and there's, like, homoeroticism in that, because it is, like, a thing that happens a lot in these kinds of stories, and it's always a little bit, like, it makes you feel, like, weird about it.
Not only happens a lot, but almost happens every time. It's kind of an odd thing, which takes me to this place of, like, opening. We talked about Himmler's, like, plan to kind of, like, let's just Aryanize these communities. Like, we'll make them blonde and pretty. There's something so horny about him wanting everyone to be blonde and beautiful. And it's just, I mean, it's disgusting, obviously. And these are obviously extremely horrible war crimes and travesties. But there's a really strong theme of rebellion and fighting back, and, like, how, you know, in every different region that was fighting back, it added up to the wider whole of things eventually turning a different direction. But I don't know, that idea of these communities having to face the idea of assimilation, not knowing what was going to happen.
I knew, like, a, like, tiny bit of that just from, like, background knowledge, but just hearing about all of that was, it's really heavy and it's really horrible. And also, like, part of what's horrible about it is that it's not that unusual. Like, it seems, like, very similar to, like, any kind of, like, imperialism or any kind of, like, genocide project that happens. And it's, like, as much as we think of, like, the atrocities of World War II as so incomparable to anything else, like, there have been and are other atrocities that have, like, followed similar patterns, and it just is really horrible. But then it makes you glad to know that, like, people were fighting back and that people were inspired by that fighting back.
Whenever I read these stories about, like, the long-term plans of the Nazis, it's giving me very Project 2025 in such an icky way. How are you doing in 2025, my friend? I don't know. It's a crazy time. How are you?
It is such a crazy time. It's like, just when you think things can't get more strange in, like, the most awful way, I am feeling a little bit more hopeful, maybe because I live in New York and Zoran Mamdani just was elected for mayor. So I'm like, I wasn't even sure if that was something that could be possible. And now I'm hoping that that will bring some change and maybe inspire people to realize that, like, their change is possible. Yeah, you just see cruelties that you didn't know people were capable of conceiving, let alone carrying out. It is just a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I live in Utah, but it's an interesting thing making these, because these episodes end up coming out about 6 or 8 weeks later after we record them. So Mamdani was just elected last week, yeah. And everyone's like, yay, hope! I forgot what hope people think. But then, like, the next day, the Supreme Court, like, reinforced the passport thing against trans people, and they're, like, taking up gay marriage. And then, like, I heard about another ICE attack down the road from my house. Like, it's so crazy to balance all of that, right? But it is wonderful to find those hopeful things to latch on to.
Yeah.
Hope is important, and joy is important. And I think both are how we create defiance in the act of all of this, right? I'm grateful for your friendship, my friend. Do you have any final thoughts on this, you know, light and fluffy anecdote that I took you on called America Lost?
I think just that, like, what you said about hope, I think that is, like, why people tell Captain America stories and why that character matters to people, because, like, it feels very silly to have, like, a superhero called Captain America when they're, like, there's a lot of really awful stuff that the U.S. has done and continues to do, but it's, like, you want to believe in Steve Rogers, and, yeah.
He's the values of the boomer generation. I don't know if it fits anymore.
Well, I liked him in this story. He seems like a solid guy.
Yeah, I had a big crush on Steve Rogers when I was here. So, you know. Well, Priya, we're still getting to know each other. We've hung out on a couple different shows, but I'm really learning to just respect your, like, very quiet and soft, smart, intelligent, like, insights. I just edited a big episode we did together, and I was, like, really enjoying, like, just tuning into your insightful thoughts. So I really look forward to hanging out again. You're fantastic.
Thank you. That's very kind. I like dropping into these, like, conversations about comics that, like, I hadn't read or I hadn't, like, thought about much before, and then, like, kind of having to consider them. It's like a fun exercise for my brain. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, after we did Warrior Woman together, we had a follow-up. So yeah, we'll hang out again soon and we'll make it silly next time, I promise.
Great.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Take care of yourselves. Be safe out there. Priya, thanks for hanging out tonight. We'll see you all back here next week on the Grey Malkin Lane Show. Thank you for listening to Grey Malkin Lane. We hope you are enjoying this podcast. Grey Malkin Lane is produced and recorded in Salt Lake City, Utah, with music and editing done by my husband, Michael Bell, and promo art done by the incredible Seth Martell. Look for us on Patreon, where we are releasing weekly episodes about obscure characters and facts. It's a great way to participate with the podcast for only just a couple of dollars a month, and it helps support what we are doing here. Also, the best way you could help Grey Malkin Lane is by sharing and liking and subscribing, but also please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We'll see you back here next time on Grey Malkin Lane.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.